Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Ten Backwards, featuring me, Will Turland, this man, Rick Palmer.
Sayonara.
And this man, Rick Everson.
Hello. Good evening, good morning, whichever time of day you're listening to this.
Yeah, we have listeners in America.
That's true.
We have listeners in the morning and the afternoon and the evening. That's the beauty of podcasts. Really, you can listen to it anytime you want. We're not going to tell you what to do. Don't listen to our rules. We're not the man.
No. But we are recording this in the evening, UK time, approximately, just 9:30.
21:30 hours.
Yeah.
This is the level of detail that other podcasts think is rubbish and won't give you, because it's quite boring and detracts from the subject. I think we might talk about Star Trek or something.
But we should.
Yeah. It's a lovely summer evening. The birds are coming outside. Sorry. I want to give them some information for the theatre of mind.
Close by, my puppy is fast asleep, all curled up on the sofa.
We usually podcast from my house, but today we're at Rick Everson's house. Yeah. And that's because we've travelled to Lincoln to go to the Geekabilia convention.
We did indeed.
Which we mentioned in our previous podcast.
Yeah, we met Timmy R.
Yeah.
Tim Russ.
Anywho.
You may remember him as a guy on the bridge of the Enterprise B in Star Trek Generations.
Yeah. Yes. But this podcast is not about that.
No.
This podcast is about a Deep Space Nine episode called Little Green Men. And I'm going to hand over to Rick Palmer to explain why. Why are we talking about such a thing? It's just one episode. What were we thinking?
Okay, so July 2017 marks the 70th anniversary of perhaps the most famous event in ufology, the Roswell incident.
Mm.
Yeah, in early July 1947, a farmhand called Mac Brazel discovered an unusual debris field on the ranch, the Foster Ranch, where he worked. He took some of this material that he found and contacted the local sheriff, who then went to the nearby army base to tell them what this guy found. The army base sent out three staff. The main guy was called Jesse Marcel. So they went to this field, they collected some more of the wreckage and took it back to their base. And later on, the public information officer at the base would put it out on the news wire that they had taken possession of a flying saucer. And there was an actual headline in the Roswell Daily Record, which I have a copy of here in this book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. Mm-hmm. It's a great read. But it says, RAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. everyone was listening to Big Band music and flying saucers were landing. But this was swiftly retracted. Within hours, there was a message saying, you cannot repeat the story anymore. It's an issue of national security. The stop on this story was down as an issue of national security. And it was later confirmed that, well, it was later explained that what had been found was wreckage from a weather balloon. Jesse Marcel and another guy were made to pose with this wreckage, holding it up. And that was it, really. That was essentially where the story ended. Later on, the military would say that, well, actually, the wreckage wasn't a weather balloon. It was a balloon related to something called Project Mogul, which I think was a project for detecting nuclear explosions. This 1947 was essentially the beginning of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Tensions between America and Russia were increasing, and so that's what it was. But that's never really it's never been enough of an answer. There are debunkers and there are ufologists who think that it definitely is a flying saucer. Some that think it was aliens that landed. Some think it was a test. It was some kind of test of experimental craft. Some think it was reverse engineered Nazi flying saucer had been reverse engineered. Some people think it was a flying saucer piloted by Nazis that were on the moon.
Moon Nazis.
It was moon Nazis.
Is it an official theory that it could have been Ferengi who travelled back in time?
Unfortunately. Well, there are some people that think it was aliens that crashed.
Yeah.
I think the and essentially the story died in 19 pretty much died in the 40s. It came back into light in the late 70s when the military officer who first went to inspect the wreckage, Jesse Marcel, he talked to a ufologist called Stanton Friedman, who wrote about it. And then in the mid-90s, a guy called Ray Santilli said that he had footage of an autopsy of an alien that they found in the wreckage. And it was, I think I remember watching some of it on the Big Breakfast. Do you remember that show?
Right, I do. Presented by Chris Evans.
The guy, Ray Santilli, I'm sure he was on the Big Breakfast. And I remember it was crazy. They showed this footage in the morning before I went to school. It's grainy footage of some doctors doing an autopsy on an alien corpse.
Right.
It's widely known to be a fake.
Was there a British movie starring Anton Deck?
Yes, there was.
I thought there was. What was it called? It just called
Alien Autopsy.
Alien Autopsy.
Not imaginative.
So the story in that film is that they did have the original film, but it was old film. I think that it was like celluloid. They opened it up, it burned up. Right. So what you've seen is a recreation of a real film. Anyway, so that's what the Roswell incident was, and the episode we're covering, Little Green Men, offers an explanation for the Roswell incident. It's not moon Nazis, it's Ferengi.
I suppose it's a big part of it's a big kind of part of our culture, the Roswell incident. I think it's maybe the most famous UFO.
Definitely, it's well worth. If you're at all interested in ufology, I would recommend I would definitely recommend this book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. It covers all the bases, it's a good starting point for that subject. It's well worth investigating, I think. And like you say, it's a cultural event. But
yeah.
There was a TV series, wasn't there, called Roswell, which is all about.
That's right.
I think Jonathan Frakes directed episodes.
Was there a TV series called Hangar 18? Oh wait,
Warehouse 18.
Warehouse
13.
Warehouse 13.
I thought there was. Wait, I'm.
There was a kids show called Hangar 17.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But I don't think they were riffing on the. I think it was a music show.
Was it in
space, though?
Anyway.
I don't think it was. but anyway, it's a big part of culture, and elements of it have been riffed. I mean, you could argue that the X-Files maybe wouldn't have come about if it wasn't
for
big
things. Yeah, the mid-90s was definitely.
Rife with conspiracy theory, that sort of. They loved that sort of thing. It was a huge part of entertainment culture there. It informed a lot of show premise.
If you hadn't guessed, Rick has a keen interest in UFOs and all things Fortean, right?
Definitely. That's how I would describe myself, as a Fortean.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more sceptical these days. In my younger days, I was really fascinated by the Roswell incident. I had a big old book. It was called Mysteries of the Unexplained.
I think I had that book too.
And it was a hardback. It was massive. I'd pore over the Roswell section, and I just found it fascinating. And I've become a bit more sceptical in my old age. But regardless of your opinions on what really happened at Roswell, it's a big part of. You can't argue that it didn't happen in terms of a cultural phenomenon, can you? And that, I think that's what this DS9 episode really kind of riffs on. Relies on your familiarity with that story, doesn't it?
Indeed. I used to pore over a big book called the Star Trek Encyclopedia.
When you say used to, do you mean like just before this podcast?
All the time. Still do. I would love to actually get hold of that new copy. It looks amazing. It looks absolutely beautiful. But as yet, I haven't, because it's really expensive.
Yeah.
And I procreated, so I've got two little money vacuums that just suck up all my spare cash.
Yikes.
Ah, it's beautiful to have children, it really is. Yeah. Anyway, I've digressed. Shall I talk about my feelings on this episode?
Please.
Excellent, right. Now, as I have referenced my youth, well spent as it was with the Star Trek Encyclopedia,
yeah.
I didn't actually care for Ferengi episodes. I dismissed Quark as a bit of a comedy character who detracted from the very dark, serious stories of Deep Space Nine, yeah. And is a bit of a misguided attempt to appeal to children. But nowadays, I think my youthful self is a dick.
What?
Ferengi episodes are fun, and we do need occasional respites in the DS9 sea of serious episodes. Yeah, they can be very silly, but it is a show about spaceships and like shape-shifting aliens and stuff, so, you know, I think a little bit of silliness can be forgiven here and there, can't it? You know, if I'm completely honest, I love Fascination, one of the silliest episodes ever to grace any of Star Trek. That's the one where Laxwana Troi comes to DS9 and she has this thing that causes her to telepathically project an illness. Everyone starts acting on their like most latent crushes.
Do you know, I really like that episode.
I think it's so ridiculous, really, it's just so much fun.
It's a real soap opera kind of episode. Mm. It's just all about people's feelings and relationships, and it's funny.
It's also the most horrifying bit is when Quark suddenly declares his hidden love for Keiko. And so he's like literally grabs her by the shoulder and starts rubbing his ears on the side of her head. And it's like, oh, dude. I don't know if they'd established it.
It's about the same miles.
But we are digressing. So, and the other appeal of Ferengi episodes is actually I've realised the true value of Quark. To have someone so different to our idea of Federation values, but so completely recognisable, like the humans of the 20th century, obsessed with profit and acquiring things. So it's kind of a really interesting... Because he can turn that on its head by, like... He has these scenes scattered through Deep Space Nine where he can, like, totally, like... talk to Sisko and say, actually, your Federation is stupid because of this. You see it in the Jem'Hadar and the way the Federation... espouses equality values and, you know, openness and friendliness for all people, yet they all look down on the Ferengi. Where the Warrior, that brilliant talk he has with Garak about the Federation and its insidious nature. And Siege of AR-558, when for all the Federation's values of peace and friendliness, they start a war over quite a small, in more Quark's eyes, over little provocation. Yeah. And so he sort of does maybe hold up these hard truths that lie behind the supposedly perfect Federation. And then, because you've got Rum and Nog, who grow so much through the series, and I think they're incredible stories too. So there's probably two episodes that push that envelope on silly. Little Green Men is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
The other one is Quark being a lady.
Is it Profit and Lace?
Profit and Lace, yeah.
Yeah.
But that is let down by its appallingly sexist moments.
It's like it's regarded as one of the worst episodes of Star Trek ever, I think, isn't it?
I mean, I have something positive to say about almost every bit of Star Trek, but even I struggle a little bit with Profit and Lace.
Oh, I feel like that could be a future podcast in the making, couldn't it? If we feel like we want to torture ourselves. Mm.
So, breaking Little Green Men down to my top moments... I think where Quark marvels over the humans who poison themselves with smoking and setting off atom bombs. That's quite a good one.
Yeah.
Charles Napier's in it as the general. He is brilliant.
He plays Adam in Journey to Eden.
Way to Eden.
Way to Eden, sorry.
Yes, so he's always great.
Head to Eden.
And he's also...
Yeah, brother.
He hams it up a bit.
Especially like the tough cigar chewing general.
All the cigar chewing is great.
Later in the in his career, he'd got a lot more roles that were sort of authority figures shouting and being tough guys.
But it's totally fitting for this episode.
Oh yeah, it works beautifully.
It needs a big slice of ham.
Yes, yeah, it totally works, doesn't it?
Smoked ham.
Mm.
Rom has just one of the best moments when he's come up with a clever idea, and Quark says, "When did you get so clever?" And Rom's response is, "I've always been clever, brother. I've just lacked confidence." And it's just like, oh man, that's sort of both simultaneously amazing and heartbreaking.
Yeah.
In one thing, but it totally fits in Rom's journey from where he begins to where he ends up.
It's a single line that pretty much defines his whole character, I think. If you wanted to sum him up in a single line, that'd be it.
We also see how far Nog has come. When he sort of is rather than letting Quark take all the lead, and that he sort of steps out and he tries to bluff his way through with this fake alien invasion plan and stuff. And he's like very different character to like 2 years previously.
Yeah. I think there's an effort to develop his character a bit in this episode and establish how he is different from the Nog that we first saw.
I do also like that we get a little bit of explanation about the universal translator.
Yeah.
That a lot of people have it as like this little in-ear device, and they're which explains why even when non-Starfleet people without the comm badges, they still apparently talk English. So it's nice to know that universal translators are widely available. Most people just stick them in their ear hole.
Yeah.
That's good. I quite like, it's quite clean time travel. Clean time travel is a term I've just invented for when it's not full of massive paradoxes and going back on yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
It's almost just an incidental bit, because they want to do this Roswell story, so they're not bothered about making time travel the plot and coming up with really complex...
Yeah.
I'm not against complex time travel paradoxes, but...
I love them.
Sometimes they're overdone. And what? Sometimes they're not handled well.
Wrong. You're right. You're
temporal
right.
Cold War.
Yeah, okay.
The ideas were there. I think they
didn't know what to do with it.
They didn't commit to completing it properly.
I don't
get me wrong, I'm not against complex time travel paradox pieces.
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Doctor Who. But I think Doctor Who is a show geared to do it a lot. And maybe Star Trek is something that can touch on it, but also has a wealth of other stuff. And sometimes I think we had an over-dependence on time travel in Star Trek. I said it.
Certainly in the movies, you could argue that. A lot of the movies touch on time travel and use it as a bit of a plot device.
But this, there's no duplicate rogue Captain Braxton's or anything like that. All those cumbersome and complex things like, we got there and we're going to have a little technobabble thing to get us back.
That is silly. Flying into a bomb.
Yeah.
But it's in keeping with the... Like, they almost make a joke of it, I think.
It is kind of so like it is a B-movie thing. Little Green Men is kind of like a little B-movie, I think.
If it was
a film from the 40s and say, we're going to have to fly right through this explosion to get back to 1999, which is the future for these people.
1985.
We're like, I love this film. It's great. So I don't mind how they get home.
I think they play it deliberately because earlier on in the episode they've had a bit of Rom doing some ridiculous techno babble on the way there, and I think it's kind of, it's almost like a bit of an in-joke, or maybe a bit of a nod to the audience that Rom comes up with this absolute nonsense speech about how they're going to get back.
So Quark's ship is hauling chemosite?
Chemosite, yeah. Yes.
And the ship is kind of intentionally sabotaged to blow up?
Yes. Yeah, Quark's cousin Gaylor has given him the ship, but sabotaged it because he's a jerk.
Yeah.
But luckily, Quark has decided to smuggle chemosite, one of those... does anything substances that are useful for any technobabble solution. And not only that, but when they do what they did with it, whatever Rom did with it to save them initially, inadvertently send them back through time, enough was left to get them back to where they started.
Exactly, the exact amount they needed.
So use half, I guess.
Yeah.
It's that but you're kind of just going with it because it's one of those episodes. It's an episode that screams, let's all just go with it, and you want to because you're going to have more fun that way.
Yeah, it's that trope of like, how do we get back to the present? We replicate exactly what happened to get us back to the past, and that will definitely get us back to the exact time.
It won't take us another 400 years in the past.
And there's no element where you think, how difficult would that be to replicate the exact situation that you don't even know what the situation was, that it was an accident that got you there. How do you replicate? Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, they kind of didn't replicate because initially they were stuck in high warp and did something at the Keem site.
That's true.
What they did in this was fly into an atom bomb.
It really takes them back to the very second they'd left, and that's fine.
But I'm not going to over.
It's not the sort of episode where you, I don't know, overanalyzing it.
Likewise, the fact that Odo had stowed aboard.
Yeah, he was a dog for a while.
Yes. Yeah. But that again, that's like a bit of a Deus Ex Machina to get them out of.
Yeah, I've written Deus Ex Odo because it's about, it's maybe it's a good 35 minutes or so into the episode, suddenly Odo shows up. He's been there the whole time.
What was he disguised as in the ship when it was almost maybe going to explode?
Why
he's
did
like,
he decide?
I'm fine, they'll be fine. I'm going to reveal myself.
Like one of Quark's slippers or something.
I think he was just like, I love being a dog. I'm going to stay as a dog for ages. Yeah. Sniffing butts.
No, I'm going to sniff my own butt, sniff other dogs' butts.
Eating sausages. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Quark's being nutty. I'll tell you what, I'm going to be Odo for a bit. Sort this out.
It would have been cool if Odo had just been a dog for a while on DS9, going, yeah, he likes being that dog. You know, he's still a security.
Ah, maybe there could have been a nice twist and it would turn out that Jonathan Archer's beagle was actually
Odo.
Going back in time. Yeah.
Should totally have done that. That would have been awesome. Okay. So anyway, those were my thoughts and with additions. Who else would like to tell us what they felt about
me? Well, I've written some notes on it. We've already covered some of the things that I've said on this. But what's interesting about this episode, when I revisited it, is that I realised that the first 15 minutes of the episode are set in the current DS9 time. It's a good 15 minutes in before they travel back in time. Oh. So that whole story is Rom's contained in just a 30-minute chunk.
And Rom is the 15. There's a bit where he's leaving for Starfleet Academy, isn't he? That's why.
Yeah, a Nog.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And there's some. Actually, I really like some of the stuff in that first 15 minutes where there's like a coming of age tradition where they're selling off Nog's childhood possessions.
Mm.
It's a nice idea. It really fits with the Ferengi mythology.
It does. It's quite apt with Ferengi.
It's a fun, warm scene where like everyone finds something they like. Worf really takes to Nog's tooth sharpener.
Mm.
He goes nuts for it. He makes a funny little expression. Tries it on his teeth and he's like, oh my god, how much is this?
Like, Klingon teeth are like Ferengi ears, I get, I bet.
Yeah, I wonder. And then there's a silly gag about Nog's trying to sell Kira a racquetball. Racket.
Yeah.
And Kira's like, that's my racket. I lost that from my room 2 years ago. Nog's like,
at least I didn't steal your underwear.
He doesn't say that, but I was thinking that. And I did find myself thinking,
that was Lot 47.
Well, yeah. It's played as a joke, but actually, it's pretty immoral for a Starfleet officer, a guy who's going to be a Starfleet cadet. I guess the implication is he did that,
right?
Right. Well, in my head canon, that's how I've justified it. Because she says she'd lost that racket 2 years ago. So I was like, okay, well, 2 years ago, Nog is a very different character.
Yes.
So he could have broken into her quarters horrifically.
I think he'd genuinely forgotten that he'd nicked it.
Yeah. Well, I think, in my head canon, that I decided that he didn't break into her quarters. He found it, maybe in a holosuite after she'd been doing some racquetball. She thought she'd lost it somewhere, and he just held on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe he was too embarrassed to give it back to her or something. And
maybe I reckon he maybe had a crush on her, broke into her quarters and stole something of hers.
Yeah. What struck me is that actually Kira's pretty blasé about it.
Mm.
She's like, hey, try from my quarters. I've been looking for this for a couple of years, and that's it. Not like, what the fuck are you doing in my quarters?
That's a
man, I'm going to kick your Ferengi ass.
I'm calling security.
Yeah, actually, when you consider the conditions Kira grew up in, she was minimal personal possessions. The fact that someone now, in this point of her life, still her personal space is violated, her things are taken.
I don't know, should have said, oh, I'm going to make sure you don't get to Starfleet Academy because of this crime.
The problem was, he was a dog. He would have been like, ruff, 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 ruff. I love being a dog. Ruff, ruff.
Dog Odo would be
Dog-o. Dog-do. But actually, and a minimum, that's breaking and entering. And does that... Would having a criminal record affect whether you can be accepted?
Well, he already had one because he had been arrested.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Trying someone for the things they did in the past.
Yeah, that's how the law works.
Yeah, you can't convict them for things they haven't done yet.
Yeah. And, you know, if you did a murder 2 years ago, I think that's
ruin,
still a
you're
problem.
You're going to ruin non-Starfleet career because of space racket theft?
Would it? Well,
obviously they didn't. I just thought it was a little bit odd that Kira's so cool about it.
Me too.
But as you say, maybe it was just a lost property thing that he never got around to returning.
Yeah,
and forgot
in my head canon, it's more innocent than they play it in the show. But I really like that stuff, actually. And that,
didn't you do anything weird when you were a teenager?
This isn't the forum to go into that.
I didn't steal anyone's racquetball racket. That would be madness.
I mean, it's not something I would ever say is a good thing to do. But kids shoplift and stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
I did shoplift. I'm not proud of it at all. Like I feel really bad about it now. When I was like a teenager, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just, I don't know. I mean, sounds like that.
If there are any members of Her Majesty's Constabulary listening, you can find Rick's contact details on the Lower Decks website.
If I tell you what it was I shoplifted, you'll understand. It was pornography.
Oh my word. Right.
And thus ends Rick's Starfleet Academy career.
I was tall, I could reach up to the top shelf.
Okay.
Not something I look back on.
Now I understand why you're defending Nog. So
what a startling confession! I did not see this coming.
We have learned something about Rick Palmer tonight.
Took the magazines, broke down the magazine into separate pictures, sold the pictures.
No way! Yeah. I don't believe it. So
it's not racketeering.
That's not the right word, is it?
Isn't racketeering what Nog did?
Yeah, yeah. Very good point.
Profiteering, I guess.
I'm not
proud of it, but it did happen.
We've got one paragraph into my notes. We've got a page.
We've had a startling confession to a criminal past.
I was not expecting
paragraph 5?
Yeah, I was not expecting little green men to expose us like this.
I'm sorry, audience, but when Will turns the page, it is going to fuck the hell out.
You're just saying that you're not the man. This is man talk. Getting me...
It's a matter for the police to do.
Criticising me for my past wrongs.
Dog Odo was here. He'd be horrified.
maybe Dog Odo is.
He's not changing into normal Odo to arrest you.
His name ends in an O.
Yes, for the benefit of those not on the holodeck, my puppy is in the room and he is asleep. His name is Arlo. So far, he's not revealed himself to be Odo undercover.
I remember a little while ago when we were talking about Star Trek, that we were talking about Star Trek.
Oh, yes. Well,
to be fair, you were talking about Star Trek there. Yeah. Morn is watching the bar. That seems
a foolish move.
It does. And there's a line where Quark says he trusts Morn more than all those Ferengi waiters. What Ferengi waiters? I don't remember ever seeing a Ferengi waiter.
Yes, Ferengi waiters.
Yeah. Are there?
Some of them even get names by the end of the series.
Mm.
Like Frool and Grimp or something. Mm. Gruel and Frimp.
Jambles.
Like
I'm just going to cross that out of my notes then. It's not a valid point.
You do see them, but they're not mean.
Mr. Whiskers.
Jimmy the Ears.
Ironically, has the smallest ears of all of them.
But there's actually a really touching scene, I think, with Jake and Nog, where they're kind of saying goodbye on the promenade.
We're talking about the spot, aren't they?
Yeah,
look down the tops of all the pretty girls.
That is pretty much what they were doing on the promenade. They were watching girls, weren't they? But there's a nice callback to the previous seasons where they hung out together, and now it's an acknowledgement that things have changed. And it's really well played, that scene. There's some genuine emotion there from Jake and Nog.
From this point onwards, both, well, Quark as well, but both definitely Rom and Nog progress as characters.
Yeah.
I think he probably saved Nog in a way. I mean, that character, where would that character have gone?
It's incredible the way he went. And this is indicative of the whole thing of Deep Space Nine, is that things do change, things do progress, and things do move on. In a way that other Star Trek series haven't really tackled, outside of some minor things like Wesley going off to the Academy.
Yeah,
cast are pretty much fully formed when you meet them in most series, I think.
And there's a bit of a convoluted scene where Nog gets a gift from Bashir, which is like an Earth guy.
Oh yeah, guy to Earth,
and like a pretty hefty electronic Oh no, it's a pad, isn't it? Mm. It's like a pad with basically all of like the Wikipedia pages for Earth downloaded on. And it's and Bashir pretty much says, well, this might come in handy if you go back in time to 1947 and need to know some Earth facts that you wouldn't know because you're a Ferengi. and I quite like the kind of setup with quite getting that ship from Cousin Gala. Mm. It's like a 10-year-old promise to, but it's basically Grog's a setup treasure. So that it kind of works. It's like, okay, yeah, that you know, maybe he it's a fair reason to want to take Nog to Earth himself and he's doing the smuggling thing. Like, as far as convoluted setups go, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's perfectly acceptable.
Again, this is an episode that we know you just got to go with, though.
Yeah.
So.
And there's some nice scenes on the way to Earth. Again, we haven't even got to the time travel bit yet. There's some really nice scenes with Quark and Nog where Rom discovers that Quark's doing some smuggling. And Quark almost sees... I think Quark plays it is in that he's actually impressed and kind of pleased that Rom not only discovers this but then tries to blackmail Quark and says he'll take 20% in order to keep quiet, and then Nog fucks him over for another 10%. And Quark's pretty much like that is it feels like that's Quark's proudest moment. Like Quark's, he's annoyed
but he doesn't haggle, he kind of lets it go.
He has a little smile on his face and he's almost like, oh, my family.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's something that, because he's so... The whole thing about Nog going to join Starfleet is kind of really got under his skin a little bit, hasn't it? So I think the fact that they show his idiot brother and his Starfleet nephew have shown a little bit of Ferengi style to them.
Yeah, I think he likes it.
He's so happy he's not even going to fight on that percentage.
He's nice.
They're a bit like the trotters in Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah. Very much so. But yeah,
you could do this. The Only Fools and Horses credits with some clips out of Deep Space Nine. Oh, it would still work. Imagine
definitely.
That.
I could forget everything I saw.
How much?
20% of the profits.
I suppose you'll want to cut too. I'll take 10%.
Yeah, and then it's like it's quarter of an hour in, and then the story starts, and they go back in time, and. There's some fun stuff back in Roswell in 1947. Like you said, the whole
they wake up at the base. There's you don't see any. Well, their ship doesn't explode. Right, their ship's still intact.
Yeah.
So,
fortunately.
And they cut. It's quite economic storytelling. It's like, bang, they're straight into the base. Mm. Immediately, you can get to the
because they're not. The that's not what the episode's about. Is it? It's not, the episode's not about finding this stuff. It's about
And it's there's some good stuff. There's a bit of a silly scene where the what's the thing they have in their ears? The universal translator fails, and they're all banging themselves on the head. And
so
the human character is like, and then but there's some nice stuff where Quark sees. The time travel as a business opportunity.
Yes.
That's really fitting to his character. And there's some stuff about... he's talking about the... and they think they might be dead, don't they? And Quark
says... Point,
Where's the blessed exchequer? Where are the celestial auctioneers? And why aren't we bidding for our new lives? Hmm?
Which is a nice little bit of information on their Ferengi afterlife.
They're quite spiritual, kind of like actually, because there's always been a very firm belief in the afterlife being, you know, either
what's
this
the,
great
what's
thing.
What's the river? It's like a river, isn't it? There's an episode where Nog's trying to.
Oh yeah, they have the belief in the Great River.
There's a bit where. They need some kind of component, don't they, for the Defiant? Maybe?
Yeah, and O'Brien lets Nog do a whole bunch of wheeling dealing trades back and forth, including at one point loaning out Sisko's desk
to a guy who gets a boner from taking pictures of famous desks.
Yeah, he's got one from that Captain DeSoto, Captain Picard. It's like,
you're a warrior, idiot.
That's and I think later in series four, there's one where for It's a long, complicated thing, but essentially Quark thinks he's died, and he has a dream about being in the whatever the Ferengi heaven is.
Yeah.
I mean, Greedy the Gates. And they also reference the Vault of Eternal Destitution.
Yeah.
It's the hell.
And I think they make reference that, well, Ron mentions the other place. Mm. And I think he's talking about the...
And he says, impossible, the bar is turning a profit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite set in that. It's like, you know, whereas like a lot of people might believe fervently they've lived a good life and wouldn't go to hell or something. He's like, it's just down to the profit margins, you know. And it's like, actually, any time that the bar's doing badly and Quark's, you know, run up a couple of debts, he's thinking, if I die now, I'm in the shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But they seem quite steady in their belief of this, and it's kind of weird. It's not touched on a lot, but the Ferengi spirituality is quite strong, really. It seems to be a very defining factor in their lives.
There are some lines, there's a line I think Quark says where he thinks they're going to, by staying in this time, they'll have Ferengis will have warp technology before some other races.
Yeah.
Klingons and Vulcans and so on. And I think that does make sense because Vulcans and Klingons have had warp technology for a long while before, I think.
Yes. Like obviously the Vulcans have warp technology at least before 2160s. So that's 120 years. So you say that, but by that point, the Vulcans have had warp technology at least 20 years. There is the Enterprise episode where T'Pol relates the story of her grandmother, who got stranded on Earth in the 60s, suggesting Vulcans had warp technology at least as early as less than 20 years before, after that episode. But there is always the thing there that she's... Is T'Pol pulling the legs? Is she messing with them? Maybe she is.
But the people that will eventually become the Romulans left Vulcan a long, long time ago, didn't they?
Yes, but I always got the impression that from the sundering, the separation of Vulcans and Romulans, and the war around that, that maybe the technology was lost for some time afterwards. Mm. And that Vulcan had to rebuild itself as a society before it rebuilt itself in its technology. Well,
could they have ships that were pre-warp in that time? Or would they have travelled distances that are...
They could have had pre-warp ships, yeah, but in the way that Khan's Botany Bay was pre-warp.
Yeah.
You could also have...
Sleeper ships
you could also have FTL drives that aren't warp drives.
We don't really see that in Star Trek, or do we? Do we see any other? If we're getting off topic a bit here,
we see the Soliton wave in an episode of Next Gen, which is a way to basically a wave that would propel a ship into faster than light speeds without the ship actually having any say in it. It's generated from a planet and it shoots the wave towards another planet and takes a ship with it, kind of thing. That's another version of it, but they still say the Soliton wave takes it into warp.
Yeah,
so it's still
like
this consistent. The only way to go faster than light is to enter warp space.
Going back to Little Green Man.
Yes.
One thing I made a note here that I don't think that the human characters come off all that well in this story. Like, there's a bit of work that's done around the doctor and nurse character. Like, you find out that they're in a relationship, and it's kind of all... feels like they need a bit of character for these characters, because they sort of unexpectedly turn on the other human characters and let the Ferengi go. And that's
the idealists who imagine, like, contact with another race would be very peaceful and beneficial around, so they're sort of willing to help, aren't they?
But they're like in The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 1950s, the original one of the version of that film.
There's no other version.
So, okay, in the Day the Earth Stood Still, the characters that befriend Klaatu, they're a bit like that, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a great film. The director of The Day the Earth Stood Still also directed the motion picture.
They did. Robert Wise.
Right.
Yes. But yeah, I'd see what you mean. The human character is in the 40s segment. They're basically caricatures.
Yeah,
I think,
they're sort of cartoonish. And they're kind of ciphers.
They've taken all the sort of the pulp films based in that era.
It's another kind of B-movie
military
thing.
Stuff. Yeah, it's
yeah,
very.
You scientists and all your scientific ways, we need to deal with this in a military fashion.
They are very B-movie stereotype caricatures.
Yeah, maybe that's kind of deliberate.
And I know that they kind of riffed on that. And even one of the things I think they'd say, if you look at some of the comments from the writers in the in things in books like the DS9 Companion. They're saying how they had them smoke like cigarettes every 30 seconds because everyone's always smoking in these B movies. You know, answer to every crisis as soon as anything happens, pass around the cigarettes kind of thing. So, but they do. There is a very B movie caricature of it. Again, it's like you're going to go with it for this episode because it's that sort of an episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe if they should have done it in black and white, that would have been cool. Like the episode of the X-Files is in black and white.
Well, isn't there an episode of Voyager where they
Captain Proton stuff is all in black and white?
Yeah, Bride of Chaotica.
Because it's sort of the Captain Proton thing is obviously evocative of the old Flash Gordon movie series, isn't it?
Yeah.
Satan's Robot. It's great.
Yeah. But so I like overall on this episode, I kind of reminded me, and like it's not a terrible episode by any means, but as far as Ferengi comedy episodes go, it's not as good as, say, The Magnificent Ferengi, which I love.
I think that's maybe the pinnacle of awesome Ferengi episodes.
It's proper funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's genuinely great. And if I was going to choose a Ferengi comedy episode, I'd go for that.
That or The Emperor's New Cloak, when the Ferengi go to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
I think that's a really well done, awesome Ferengi episode as well.
Yeah, that's fun. But it's like, but this episode isn't as bad as, say, Profit and Lace, as we've mentioned. Like, but then as far as comedy episodes go, like, it's not as good as, say, Cupid from Next Gen, which I love. And then as far as time travel goes, you know, it's not on a par with things like Yesterday's Enterprise or City on the Edge of Forever.
No, that's not a fair comparison.
It's not what it's no, because it's not meant to be.
I guess,
time travel is an incidental part of that, as I sort of said. So
I know what you mean, but yeah, I mean,
because ages ago I bought back in the days when people bought DVDs before streaming and Netflix, I bought a time travel box set. And on that,
where
box
is it
set,
now?
I've still got it. And on that time travel box set, there were some great. If there was City on the Edge of Forever, there was Yesterday's Enterprise, Year of Hell parts 1 and 2, all very serious, kind of thought provoking sci-fi episode, time travel episodes, All Good Things, which is the brilliant Next Gen season finale, just amazing, and there was Little Green Men. And it doesn't sit well with all the other episodes on those discs. But I really I took against this episode when I first saw it because I saw it on this box set.
I think it's an unfair comparison.
But revisiting it, it's all right. It's all right. It's got some fun stuff in it. I don't have a problem with it. I thought I was going to come to this podcast with some rage against Little Green Men, but. Yeah, I don't. It's fine. It's fun.
And considering we're commemorating the Roswell incident, it's apt.
Yeah. I enjoyed revisiting it.
Yeah. Rick, do you have any further thoughts on Little Green Men?
I thought it was. I think you guys have covered it pretty well. I thought it was a fun episode. I think that, like you guys were saying. It's interesting that it doesn't start immediately with that story. It's a fair way into the episode before we even get to what's actually going on, and then what the resolution to that is pretty cool. It seems like an episode where the writer's like, "Hey, the Roswell incident's kind of why don't we write an episode where we riff on that and put it together and." It seems like an episode which is pretty light and breezy. It's got a decent enough story. It's an opportunity to have an episode which focuses on some characters which we wouldn't normally focus on, and which two of the characters would always from that point onwards would definitely change as how you saw them. So I thought it was fine. It's not one of my favourite episodes of DS9, but it's probably one I watch more now, I think, now that I've thought about it.
Yeah.
It's just one I hadn't really thought about before. Before we put this idea together about talking about it because of the Roswell incident angle.
Yeah,
but it's fine. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I don't know. I remember when I first watched Star Trek. I don't know, and DS9 especially, I was never really a huge fan of the Ferengi. I always just found them kind of a bit, I don't know, a bit annoying. And now it's very different. I like them way more. I think there's more to them, and like you were saying, they have a spiritual side, and their world is very interesting. And also, they're kind of the attitude towards them, I think, looking back at it, there are times when I watch DS9 and the attitude to the Ferengi is not good. Like, it's not unnecessary negativity towards them.
Do you know what's interesting? Yeah. Several times during what you just said, you said the words looking back, and I think that's probably something we all say a little bit when we talk about the overall thing on Deep Space Nine. Do you think Deep Space Nine takes more value once you've finished it, and then you can look back on that with sort of the view of experience, because you know how it all goes, you know how everything plays out, you know how the characters, and you go back, and those episodes that maybe you thought weren't great have a whole new value when you understand their place in the grand scheme.
I think Trek in general works best that way. I think it's great to watch. I mean, watching it new is fine, but you know, when you watch it new, you get an episode at a time, and it's a different process to watching it.
Yeah.
In retrospect, you have a bit more time, perhaps, to think about it. And there's other stuff.
Yeah, I think the bigger picture maybe gives a lot. I think I'm going to mention that particularly on Deep Space Nine, just because it's had a bit of a resurgence in popularity. I think now it's available on Netflix, people can binge it, and I think that's very good because it lends itself to that with its continuing story, which is really the popular thing now. So I think maybe it's gained a lot more love recently than it maybe had when it was originally out.
Yeah.
And that's all a good thing.
Definitely.
I think we can
always do with more Niners out there. It's a fantastic little thing. It wasn't appreciated for its greatness in its day. So
I found revisiting the first and second seasons of DS9 in my head, I had them as pretty sucky.
Mm.
When I revisited them, there's some great stuff in there. And they're more consistent in quality than the first few seasons of Next Gen. Or even Voyager, I'd say. They're DS9 is maybe the most consistently good series, I'd say.
Yeah. Cool.
I think we've reached our natural end for Little Green Men, haven't we?
I think we have.
Yes.
We had some fun.
Yeah.
Made some jokes.
Yeah. Well, to a given value of the word joke.
Yeah. We entertained ourselves.
Can I reveal something about myself?
Yeah. That is recorded and can never be forgotten.
Statute of limitations is past, I think. I hope.
Oh, but we'll how can out. It be? We're talking about time travel.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But thank you for listening. It was fun watching this episode and doing a bit of research for it as well.
Yeah.
It's nice to do an episode where it ties into our anniversary of something.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed.
So we're now going to board our shuttle, set up our chemosite, and fly into an atom bomb.
Hooray!
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward. 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. And you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick. And I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @WillTurland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MisterImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure history never forgets the name.
10 backward?
Buddy, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 backward. 10 backward.
I forgot to take that thing with them.
Thank you.
It seems to like you, brother.
Get away from me.
Hello, Quark.